You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Colton Molesky.
You sound so sleepy, Colton.
I am sleepy. I'm fresh off of the first day, my first actually day ever of media week preparing for a Super Bowl. It was a blast last night at the XL Energy Center. I was staying up really late because it didn't end until like 10:30, and then I was writing until like 12:30 at least. But I got up bright and early this morning to catch up on all my Timberwolves and basketball stuff. I had some game stuff that I wanted to watch. I was keeping track of all the basketball yesterday. If you don't know by now, this is Dane Moore on the other side of the glass from me. We're always breaking it down on Tuesdays.
Yeah, you know.
So there was some stuff that happened in the NBA. There's some stuff.
Yeah.
There's some stuff.
And this is like, I mean, probably not going to be breaking news to people by the time they see this, but it looks like John Wall is also out for 2 months with a knee scope. So the NBA is just completely...
I saw that. Just on a minor note, Cousins and John Wall, both my fantasy basketball studs. My team is getting torn apart.
Oh, man.
And obviously, it's much worse for those guys because they actually have the injury, but I'm feeling it too. We're all hurting in our own special way.
I don't know, man. I'm loving it. This is why the NBA has just become such a great, you know, product. Obviously, not because of the injuries, but because, you know, this is what makes playing fantasy sports fun, is the idea of trades and the idea of roster construction. And the NBA has just put together such a cool product that allows you, you know, to kind of play fantasy GM in your own chair and to watch us all go down. And in basketball too, with just being a star-driven league and five players on the court at one time, it's obviously a massive impact if Blake Griffin's no longer on a team, or if John Wall's no longer on a team, or Boogie, or whatever. It's after I saw that, I just kind of sent a text to my like friend group message that just the NBA rules, like, because the NBA does. It's king.
I've said it a couple times this year, but for those people who say that the NBA is boring during the regular season, I really don't know what they watch, because I'm having a blast, and this is the first year that I've gotten to really cover the NBA in depth and get paid to really pay attention throughout the entire season. But it's been so much fun, and it's always entertaining, and there's always storylines to watch for. So
the Clippers play the Pistons tonight.
I know, it's great. It's so great. Let's dive into that. Blake Griffin was traded for. You got Boban, you got Avery Bradley.
You started with Boban.
I know. You go
Boban.
Least exciting to most exciting.
No, Boban is the most exciting player that the Clippers received, because
I mean, it's good because they probably have to move. They're looking to move DeAndre and Lou Williams now too. But you also have Avery Bradley, Tobias Harris, who I actually like. He's been having a good season.
Yeah.
And then what was it? The first and second round pick in this draft, right?
Wasn't it? So it's a 2018 first round pick that is top four protected, so that's very, very likely to convert this year. As it stands right now, the Pistons are out of the playoffs. It'd be the 13th pick right now, so I mean, a lottery pick, likely a late lottery pick. Maybe if they squeeze into the seventh or eighth seed, you know, 15-16 or something like that. But that's an impactful pick to pick up, you know, for this season. And if, you know, if Blake gets hurt again, or Reggie Jackson, you know, doesn't come back, I mean, that pick can trickle up to like 7 or 8, and you're talking about like Trae Young right there. Like, I mean that could happen.
That's a very good pick. And they have the second round pick as well. So
2019.
You're getting a couple picks for him. And then you have Blake Griffin going to the Pistons. Mm-hmm. What were your initial reactions to this trade?
Well, first of all, I mean, and just I was surprised to see that Blake Griffin is seen as a net positive asset. And I mean, that's not to take away from Blake Griffin, the player. He's absolutely dynamic. Like, all disclaimers out there, and is very impactful when healthy. But he signed a 5-year, $173 million contract entering this season, and there's very few players who on that contract.
And then promptly got injured.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, even players that are healthy, that's just so much money considering he's going to be making $39 million when he's 32 years old. Like,
oh, yeah.
Think about that's how old Melo is right now. And you look at he's making $29 million right now, and that's, I mean, Melo's still good, but that can
it's
hurt
a
team. Yeah. So that was kind of my first takeaway. That was, wow, this was not only viewed by Stan Van Gundy and the Pistons as a positive asset, but very positive, because I think in and of itself that first round pick carries a ton of value, as if we assume it to be a lottery pick, there's so much power and team control, and the value of having a player on a cheap contract for 4 years. And then you throw in Tobias Harris, who's 25 years old. And I think it's very fair to say he's a poor man's Blake Griffin. He's not Blake Griffin, but he's 25. He doesn't have an injury history.
And on a way better deal.
Yeah, right. And then Avery Bradley too. And I mean, I guess we'll see what happens in time with that. But Avery Bradley, I think you can look as the equivalent of a first round pick too, because in theory, the Clippers, you know, could flip Avery Bradley somewhere else for another first round pick if they're trying to. I mean, you mentioned trading DeAndre or Lou Williams. If they really want to blow it up, they can be accumulating a lot of assets now, because as it stands today, they have their first-round pick, Detroit's first-round pick. If they trade Avery Bradley for a late first-round pick, that's three first-round picks right there.
Or DJ for one.
Yeah, DJ for one or Lou. I mean, they could really load stuff up or use that to get off a lot of money. And then I think in theory, if you're the Clippers, what that is you're accumulating all these assets so as to – not only clear cap space, but also have assets so you can go out and trade for somebody if they are able to sign a Paul George or a LeBron or even a lower level or a Blake Griffin caliber of free agent this offseason. And then they, you know, in theory can surround that star with more than what they have right now. Because, I mean, 24 hours ago, the Clippers were in a really bad financial spot. And they're not anymore. So that's huge.
Yeah, and you're looking at all these contracts that are really flexible. They can kind of go in and out. They have a lot of draft picks. They retained a bunch of their young guys still. Mm-hmm. They didn't have to give up any of those guys. And then you look at the other side of it, the Pistons. It feels a lot like what they did with Andre Drummond, where they kind of doubled down and give him the big contract instead of flipping it for picks or flipping him for young assets. And now they lose young assets in those draft picks, and they lose some of their flexibility on the cap space with guys like Bradley and Tobias Harris, and grab a guy who's on a five-year deal. And they're really just locking and doubling down on the big contracts for what they hope are all-star level players.
Yeah, and they might be all-star level players. And I mean, this is if everything goes to hell, like a Brooklyn Nets type situation with what happened with them. Like, yeah, that was great. They got KG and Paul Pierce and Jason Terry in that trade for the three first round picks that they sent out to Boston. But I mean, I don't want to.
It's just super nearsighted as of the Pistons.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but that's what I'm saying. It worked for them in the immediate because of that first season. The Nets made the playoffs, and they got to the second round and kind of like exceeded expectations there. And so like in the nearsighted, it kind of worked. But then you look at where they are today, and they're still a franchise in shambles for, you know, what they had to give up, the needing to get off of a Joe Johnson contract, a Deron Williams contract, you trading KG. I mean, they had to start all over because they made a nearsighted move. So those aren't one-to-one parallels, but there's a lot of examples in the recent history of teams being nearsighted and regretting it 5 years later. And I think that's very well where the Pistons could be in five years.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is that obviously it's really hard to kind of judge a winner and loser out of a trade when it just happened under 24 hours ago. But just looking at the flexibility that the Clippers have, and they have the draft picks, so at least they have a chance to go out and get some players via the draft. It looks like they won this just because they could still have a good team. I mean, if they trade DeAndre, and I think they should actually keep Lou Williams the way he's been playing, and then you have the better defense with Avery Bradley on there. Tobias Harris is not a bad piece. They could still be kind of a fringe eighth seed team and have a bunch of picks now.
I think it's a question of goals for both teams. What do you want? And what the Pistons are doing is suggesting that what they want is to, you know, kind of make the playoffs by any means necessary and be relevant. Now with the Clippers, it's a little more confusing. So just the example that you're saying right there, trade DJ but keep Lou Will. What do you want in that situation? You want to be the eighth seed this year in the West because Lou Williams helps you get there, but you also kind of want to be looking towards the future. I guess, like, I see that if that's your goal, if you have financial reasons, you want to sell tickets, you want to make the playoffs, if you want to do that. But for me, I'm more like, let's go all in on this, or let's blow
the whole thing up.
Yeah, I mean, because Lou Williams is free agent at the end of the season. DeAndre Jordan will probably opt out of his contract, be a free agent at the end of the season. So why hold on to them to become the sixth seed in the playoffs this year and get bounced by the Wolves?
The nice thing is that with the trade of Blake Griffin and the stuff they got for him, the beauty is you could do both, technically. Is you could look to the future a little bit and maybe not have as many draft picks, but mm-hmm. still have quite a few if you get rid of DJ, and you could still make the A seed. So I'm just saying, if you don't want to go all the way and lose fans, or maybe in your head lose kind of some of the hold in the West of right. your stature, you still can make the playoffs and have a bunch of draft picks. And that's why I like this trade so much for the Clippers, there's so much flexibility for them, and there's still the opportunity to win as well.
Yeah, I mean, the beauty's in the eye of the beholder there of, I mean, if the eighth seed is appealing to you, then go for that. I personally don't see that as good. I mean, you go and then you get swept by the Warriors. Like, I understand there's some external factors that play into that to making it valuable, but I'm just repeating myself, kind of going one way
just
or the
blow
other.
It up. Yeah. And at the end of the day, the reason I really like this is because they have the option to blow it. Whereas the Pistons, this is what you got now for right. a while. And so there's no flexibility for them.
To spin this to the Wolves, and just kind of like thinking out loud as we're just having this conversation, is that the Wolves missed that eighth seed to just make the playoffs kind of thing. Like, they were terrible for mm-hmm. so long. And now they've skipped that lower half of the Western Conference playoff picture into the top of it. And I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about how the Wolves aren't perfect right now, but in the macro, that's awesome to me that you can go from, you can rebuild and then jump all the way to serious relevance. And I mean, multiple rounds in the playoffs. I mean, that's kind of what I'm looking at for first steps of success. Sure, making the playoffs is great for any team, probably particularly the Timberwolves, haven't been there in forever. But what's even better than being the eighth or seventh seed is being the third or fourth seed. So, you know,
having a real shot at winning in the first round. Yeah, it's, and again, I just really like the flexibility the Clippers have. And
oh, I'm with you.
The Pistons are locked in now, so that'll be very interesting. The middle of that Eastern Conference is a little soft, but it's still gonna be hard to be a top five seed in the East.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm, you know, kind of torching Blake here a little bit, but and the Pistons for that, but if Blake Griffin is healthy for the rest of this season and is playing to the best of his abilities, like you said, the East is soft. Like, the Pistons could make some noise. Like, this season, Andre Drummond's been a deserving all-star.
Yeah.
And if they can kind of make it work around Blake, and if Blake is an all-star caliber player for the rest of the season, then it might be nearsighted, but the near might be very, very good for the Pistons. So it's, obviously, you know, Stan Van Gundy's not an idiot. The Jeff Bauer, their GM, isn't an idiot. There's, you know, there's reasons that they made it too. As I'm, you know, sitting back here with on my salary sheets pulled up and the trade machine, like, you know, I guess I'm allowed to have an opinion, but the ones that really matters are theirs, and they see value in it too. So, you know, I guess it can be seen as mutually beneficial. My opinion is that for the Clippers, it makes a whole lot more sense.
Oh, yeah. We're going to get to the rest of the pieces on that team, as well as covering what the Timberwolves did this weekend, but first a quick break. All right, so you have DeAndre Jordan, you have Lou Williams are the pieces that the report said. I think it was that Woj that said that they're looking to move both those pieces. Where do you anticipate those guys going?
I think and there's a lot of qualifiers in that Woj, and I think other people's reports, is if they can stay relevant and they do want to have at least according to Woj and according to tweets, they still want to be competitive for the playoffs. Mm. So that implying that they wouldn't just trade DeAndre for a first round pick and no player back, or Lou.
Yeah.
So what your question was is where could I see them going?
Yeah. Where do you like them headed?
I mean, so Lou Williams is, I mean, you can play him on the wing. I mean, he's been fantastic offensively. And you can play him, I think, alongside a point guard, which is nice. If you look at a Cleveland, I mean, that hurts their defense even more. But there's the idea of that. There's a lot of teams that, I think would be willing to, stick the Lou Williams square peg into a circular hole just because of talent and mm-hmm. ability.
And it really feels like he's going to knock everything down no matter what offense he's in right now.
But I don't know. I don't see him going anywhere that, makes that team, any team, truly like a contender or truly
just more fun on a night-to-night basis.
Yeah, which, again, like my ideology is I don't put as much value into that, but there might be a team that wants to do that. I think a lot of people would have their eyes on the Cavs. I think DeAndre Jordan in ways could be the more impactful playoff player just because of the value of defense. But I guess that's also two-sided too, because if you put DeAndre Jordan on the Cavs, and what are the Cavs concerned about is defending the Warriors. I don't know how well DeAndre Jordan would do in a series against the Warriors, because then the Warriors probably slide down and go with a Kevin Durant and Draymond Green front court. And then as good of a defender as DeAndre is, you don't want him like scatting out on the perimeter. Like you mm-hmm. want him dropping into the paint. So it's like,
at this point for the Cavs though, if you're looking at those guys, isn't some of the concern maybe like, obviously you want to try and build to beat the Warriors. That's the standard, right? But some of it too is they got to kind of pay attention to what they're doing right now just to beat the Celtics or the Raptors, because
totally.
They might not get out of the East if they don't do something.
I mean, as it stands right now, I don't think they will. I would, if I'm...
Neither does LeBron.
Yeah, if I'm putting odds on it, like, I have it Celtics, and then I'm pretty big on the Raptors. I think the Raptors are a close second for odds to get in there, and then... I mean, the rest of the East probably is not very good, so then it's probably Cavs is the next most likely. But yeah, they gotta kind of worry about getting out of the East before they start thinking about the Warriors juggernaut. But.
No, yeah. So they might. I feel like DJ, if they get one of these players, it might just be a reaction to how poorly they've played, and maybe not as much foresight to the finals.
Yeah, yeah, and just to kind of stabilize the defense a little bit.
Try and get some kind of pulse.
Right, and the tricky thing with DJ is that he's impactful still in his prime, I think, age-wise as it stands right now. But just like Blake Griffin signed this offseason, DJ can sign a massive contract in the offseason. So I don't know if you're the Cavs and the Cavs or whatever, if you're Indiana and you trade for him and – Isn't it a rental? Like, how many teams out there are going to want to be like, oh yeah, we want to trade for DeAndre and we want to pay him big money, like close to a max in the offseason? That's not a great idea either, because a max for DJ, which he apparently wants to get, I don't see how he gets that. That's paying him upwards of $40 million when he's like 34. Like that's not a good idea either. So it's tough. Players signing, even great players like Blake Griffin, signing contracts in their late 20s for upwards of $200 million is a very, very dangerous contract to sign. So pursuing a player.
If you're the Cavs too, if you're the GM, do you worry more about trying to build something around LeBron? And if LeBron leaves, you just go for everything this year? Or do you worry more about trying to get assets to build after LeBron leaves, and you're kind of anticipating him heading out?
I think you have to factor in the Warriors, because I think in a normal, an average NBA season, the Cavs, because they have LeBron, and then if they could get five solid players around him, which seems possible with the assets they have, that team could win the championship, even as terrible as they've been. Mm. But you got to look at what's going to be coming out of the West. And I don't know, is it... do you go all in like that to make the finals and have a very small chance of winning the championship? I think you make that all in move with the only if you think you have a if it can put you in the championship conversation. And I don't see how it can right now. That said, I think they are going to. I really do think they're going to go all in, and I understand that philosophy too. And if you had asked me a day ago before this Blake Griffin thing went down, I would have said, you know, this is going to be a really quiet deadline. And because of that, because there's not a lot of teams who are really wanting to make a move, because how many teams are one move away from being a contender? So in theory, that drops the demand, which would drop the price of what it would cost to go get a Lou Williams, a DeAndre Jordan, somebody at the deadline. So I was kind of thinking, like, maybe the Cavs can capitalize on that as the one team out there who has the demand higher than everyone else, and they could get a lot of things for the
bargain
price.
Value.
Yeah. Like, and I mean, whether that's moving the Brooklyn pick and a couple other, I mean, they could really finagle things around to make numerous moves and get pretty good value, I think, on those moves. But then the bigger question again is, even if they have a perfect deadline and they nail three deals that get them players that seem to make this roster even better, you got 30 games before the playoffs, and then maybe you start clicking. And even if you're clicking, this Warriors team is a fine-tuned machine. And even like the Rockets, who have to get through the Warriors, I mean, even if everything goes perfect for the Cavs at the deadline and the players fit together, I don't see how they become better than the third best team in the NBA.
Yeah. No, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I would hold on to the Brooklyn pick. I mean, even if Brooklyn plays their best basketball, it's still going to be inside the top 10, I feel like.
Okay, so, and then this is kind of ties back to the Blake Griffin thing, is this Brooklyn pick has been, like, worshipped like manna from heaven. Like, it's, and as kind of, you know, rightfully so, it's unprotected. They get it no matter what. But like you just said, it's a top 10 pick, probably, as it stands right now, 7. They could win the lottery, and then it ends up being 1, 2, or 3. And you got to factor that into the value. But still, like, its expected value is like the 7th overall pick. That's very well what this Detroit pick could be that just went to the Clippers. It's like,
this deal has gone so sideways. For anyone who said that the Kyrie trade was so lopsided, you don't get Isaiah Thomas back till January. Crowder has played terrible on defense, and he has not been the D3 player that he was in Boston. And now the Brooklyn pick might be like a 9, the 9th pick.
Which is valuable too, but
it does, but it's not an overpay for Kyrie.
Exactly. It was like viewed as this like wild card that the Cavs could play at any time. If like some player became available, they could just slap down the Brooklyn pick and just like, oh, Anthony Davis demanded a trade, Brooklyn pick. That's all. Like, no, I mean,
the Wild West big bag of money that nobody knows actually how much is in there.
I think that's the better analogy. I don't know. I think that pick has become, you know, somewhat overrated in this time here. So yeah, maybe the Cavs do hold on to it, but at the same time, I don't know. You hold on to the Brooklyn pick and you get the 8th overall pick if you're the Cavs. You're still screwed if LeBron leaves. Like, I mean,
but at least you have something as opposed to nothing.
Yeah,
they're a team that has historically not drafted well when LeBron left the first time, and then they were kind of stuck in that purgatory. Yeah. We're going to get to what the Timberwolves did over the weekend, but real quickly, I'm really bullish on the Timberwolves trying to make a little bit of a play for Lou Williams. Am I wrong there? Are you willing to give up like a Tyus and Gorgie and some picks kind of deal for Lou Williams? Is that not enough? Where do you stand? Do you think the Timberwolves have a viable chance at going for Lou?
I don't think they should go for Lou Williams, mostly because I think of the price and the fit on the team. I mean, he's a great player that would make the offense better because he's really good at offense. Jamal Crawford becomes instantly marginalized if you go get him, which is fine. Lou Williams is a much better Jamal Crawford. But it would cost at least the Oklahoma City pick. And then I just don't know. Like, it's the same question of, okay, you get Lou Williams, how much better do the Wolves get? I guess I'll ask you that. How good are the Wolves, in your opinion, if they...
I would just feel better, I think, going into the playoffs if I knew for a fact I had a guy who could really torch another team from downtown. Like, I just feel like they still don't have that, and I think that the offense takes another step up if they really have that guy in the playoffs. Because right now the offense is clicking, but in the playoffs, when a team really has a chance to dig into what you do offensively, I think that might hurt them a little bit. I'm not saying I don't think they couldn't win a series if they don't have a good matchup, but it's going to hurt them, and it's going to be visible that they don't have a real, true offensive threat from deep. And I think if Lou Williams is that guy on there, that could really change the offense for the Timberwolves in a positive.
So Lou Williams, his best skill is working in the pick and roll. Mm. And he shoots out. I think that's what you're referencing, is somebody who can punish him from deep. He can pull up and shoot out of the pick and roll. He's great at getting the bucket through there, distributing out of that. He's one of the best pick and roll players in the NBA. A pick and roll player inherently is a ball dominant player. And the Wolves have plenty of those. I think I have a lot of frustration with when Jamal Crawford's out there, you know, playing, because he seems to have the green to isolate it at any time. And I think that's a big reason why you're seeing consistent Karl-Anthony Towns not getting 10 post touches a game, is from players like Jamal and I mean, or Jimmy or Wiggins or Teague being ball dominant players, and it's kind of marginalizing the offense. I think what the offense more so needs is a player that can help facilitate a better flow to the offense, a player that stops us from hearing Andy Gurr on the bench scream green, green, green every other possession. I mean, it's dragging out too long. It's too ball dominant. Lou Williams would help the offense, but let's remember, back at the end of the day, this team isn't having offensive problems. They might not be aesthetically pleasing on offense, but at least statistically, it's finding some success. And I would say, even without a trade, this offense isn't even optimized yet for this season. I think the offense is just going to naturally improve from continuing to get more used to each other. So, I don't know. With trades, it's always the question of what do you have to give up. If it's the Oklahoma City pick and Cole Aldrich, a late first and an expiring, like, yeah, you probably do that to get off of it. But at the same time, those first round picks are valuable. Mm. And even if you're like, this team is one player away, you can go draft a guy this offseason and then maybe you move him in the future. Like it's not like an asset that just like expires, this Oklahoma City pick. You can draft somebody 20th overall and move them again. You have Justin Patton and him that you can develop so as to, make another move down the road. I just don't think this team is one particularly isolation scorer away. And as fun as it would be to look at Lou Williams or some other guys like this that the team could be exploring, my vibe from just kind of being around the team a little bit is that it really feels like a group that doesn't want to doesn't want to add another big personality, a big usage mm-hmm. player that kind of throws things off. I think there has been some truth to the notion that we've been hearing that a buyout candidate is probably what ends up happening, which, that might not be a small player either. Like that, I mean, that could be a Vince Carter, that could be a Joe Johnson or something like that. I mean, maybe that's not the impact of Lou Williams, but maybe they don't need that big of an impact as Lou Williams is what would be my argument. I would really struggle if it was they ended up moving multiple of the young assets. If we kind of look at Tyus, Patton, the Oklahoma City pick, mm-hmm. if they give up like two of those for Lou Williams and the pick, it's just short-sighted, because they're not going to bring him back in the offseason, right? Yeah. Like, they're not going to bring Lou Williams. It's a rental. It's a 30-game rental. That's just seems too much to pay for him, even though it would be fun for us to watch.
And it'd be nice to know that there is some range on the team, but you're also right. It would be a rental.
They need shooting. You're right. Like they do need shooting. I just think it would
maybe not at that price.
Yeah, not at that price. And I just don't know where, like, they need shooting, but on the wing, but who is this shooter going to be? Who's he going to play over? You know, is like, you know, you're not going to like cut down Wiggins to like 29 minutes a game. You're not going to cut down Butler. Like, I don't know. I don't see where the minutes come from. Like, yeah, you can cut out like the 7 minutes a game Marcus Georges Hunt plays, but even if they just go get like a pure shooter like Marco Bellinelli or something that they could probably get for like a second, does Bellinelli even like play more than 12 minutes a game on this team? I don't think so, because they're going to play Crawford and they're going to play the five starters and they're going to play Tyus. So there's just not really.
No, yeah, there's not a lot. There's not a lot of
tick. Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to get to a quick break and then we're going to go to what the Timberwolves have been doing over the weekend. Not a great game against the Hawks. 105-100 loss on the road to. Is it okay to say this is the worst team, or would like the Dallas Mavericks maybe? I feel like the Hawks are the worst team in the NBA.
They're one of the worst. I do think they're well coached.
They are well coached. They just don't have the guys.
Maybe they're the most talent depleted team in the NBA.
They're a rough watch is what they are. Yeah. But they
tough hang.
Exactly. Teague did not look good in this one, especially down the stretch with the timeout that he didn't have. Is this another one of those just it's a long season, you're gonna lose to some bad teams, or is this one of those where they did not look mentally like they were kind of in this game?
Well, you know, and we've been talking about on our podcast kind of this year as the bad Phoenix loss at home happened, the Orlando loss at home happened, they lost to Memphis, who was on a 11-game losing streak, and you know, we were kind of like, okay, you know, like pump the brakes, like good teams lose to bad teams all the time. It's 82-game season. But man, I was sitting there last night and I'm like, what is going on? Like, this is consistent. Like, this is consistent just to like come out flat. And they blew the Brooklyn game a couple weeks ago. Like, it particularly on the road, like middle of the week, this team just comes out flat, you know?
Well, and it's so weird, too, because you talk about how they lost to Brooklyn in that nail-biter, but then they came out and stomped Brooklyn. If you turned off the Brooklyn game over the weekend after the first quarter when they whacked them 30-11 in the first quarter, you did not miss a thing, because that was the rest of the game, was just them putting a whooping on them. And so it's not even like they play to the level of the team they're playing, because sometimes they play bad against bad teams. Sometimes they wax a bad team.
They're so freaking random. It's like I was talking to one of my buddies before the Warriors game, and it was just like, and that Warriors game was on a back-to-back, like the most schedule loss you can get. It was a road back-to-back, and you're playing the best team ever. And I was like, you know what? This Timberwolves team, like, I wouldn't be surprised if like they just randomly came out and won this game, because they just it's not even like up or down to the competition.
They're a weird team.
It's like totally weird team. I mean, and I think that's inherently the fact that they do have a lot of talent, you know? Mm-hmm. And so when that talent is turned on, I mean, I don't want to say they can beat anybody, but like in one game, they can pretty much beat anybody because they can just out-talent them. And then if you just sleep through the game, I mean, that, and you, like you don't bring it, and you're clearly not mentally locked in. I mean, there was a ton of issues in that game. That's like, Teague was awful, but that end of game, what was Tibbs doing? I mean, was Jamal Crawford coming in? Was Jeff Teague coming in? That's why Jeff Teague, or was Taj Gibson coming in? That's what Jeff Teague said after the game. He was like, I mean, I thought Jamal was coming in. That's who I was supposed to pass to. And then I found out he wasn't on the floor. Like, yeah. I don't know exactly what the details are there, but there was some clear miscommunication.
No, it was very confused in that last few minutes. Tom looked like he was going to cry after he tried to take the timeout. I didn't watch the game last night at the media stuff, but I watched the fourth quarter, most of the third quarter this morning, and they're just in it. But it's these games too where they only shot 18, they only had 18 attempts from the free throw line. It's these games where if they don't get to the free throw line in that third quarter, they look a little out of whack in the fourth quarter as well, which is kind of weird.
Good way to get to the free throw line is to give it to your best offensive player, and if he keeps scoring eight or gets eight touches a game, I mean eight shots a game. It's getting ridiculous how little Karl-Anthony Towns is touching the ball. There's just
the all-star Karl-Anthony.
Yeah, there's not an assertion to give him the ball. And I mean, one specific play, and I think I clipped it on Twitter, and and put it up there was like high pick and roll with Towns and Crawford, and I think it was maybe Plumlee who was Towns' guy, switched on to Crawford, and then so the 6'5 guard who was on Towns switched on to Towns, and Towns has him sealed in the post, and Jamal is like bang 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 dribbling like for 30 seconds, and then he does a little like driving floating pull up. It's like that is not the best option there. Like,
yeah.
I understand that you have an advantage here because you're Jamal Crawford and you're smaller and quicker than the center that switched on you, but
your
you
advantage
need to get
is
the
not
ball.
Bigger than what Towns'
exactly.
advantage is.
Exactly. And so I think that's where a lot of the confusion is. And the same thing happens a lot with Andrew Wiggins or with Butler or with Teague or whatever. Is like,
well, that's the
they
other
think
one
they is. Have an advantage, and the Towns' advantage is bigger. And
yeah.
It's just, it requires a pass to Towns, and they're like, nah, I'm just going to.
Right. This upsets you so much, and I love it. But the other thing, too, is, and Teague did have 10 assists. He had 2 points, 1 of 12 shooting. And I've hammered this all season long. You should know by now, Teague and the coaching staff, if he is feeling it in the first quarter. He's going to show you in the first 12 to 15 minutes if that's his night. And if not, you've got to get it to somebody else, because shooting 8.3% is not acceptable for your starting point guard.
To be fair, Tyus Jones was bad last night too, and that's been rare. But yeah, you could have maybe extended the leash a little bit more. And I mean, and specifically to okay, when Jeff Teague was in Atlanta, that would happen. They would, if Schroeder was having a game, they would peel back Teague and they would let Schroeder run down the stretch with them and play the whatever. Schroeder was like 22, like Tyus, and they let him do it. But there is a clear assertion with this team that no matter what end of the game, it's going to be the starting five is going to be out there. Mm. And I think that's just getting to a point where we really do need to question that. Is that the
best
thing?
Well, if you're Teague and if you're out there, it's fine if you're not shooting well. Pass it to Butler. Pass it to Towns. Pass it to even Wiggins shot 57%.
My thing with him is off-ball activity, man. That's what bothers. I understand a bad shooting night. Like, we've all been there. And, I mean, he's been there a lot recently. But, like, be active off the ball. Be assertive about your post-entry passes. I mean, you watch him off ball, and there's a laze to the way in which he plays, and that's killer too. Because and you want to like juxtapose this stuff over Tyus Jones, and that's the difference. There's constant engagement from Tyus Jones. I think Jeff Teague is a superiorly talented basketball player than Tyus Jones, but Tyus Jones is putting basketball together better. He's recognizing what the other four players are doing better, and is finding success and confidence in that. I mean, I think part of this with Jeff Teague is that he's dinged up. I mean, I think he's just kind of got a product of a wrist and ankle. He messed up his knee up. Like, he's not 100%. You have to point to that because he's not this bad. Like, this is Jeff Teague is not this bad of a basketball player.
Yeah.
He's 29. He didn't just like fall off some cliff and like, I don't know, turn into Jameer Nelson. Like, it's he's a good basketball player, but I'm kind of with you now where if you would ask me a month ago, I was like, all right, like, chill with this Tyus Jones. Like, there's a starter and there's a backup. It's okay if the backup's good and playing 15 minutes a game, but I'm kind of with you where they need to start to read what Teague is, particularly now, and particularly if he is injured. Like, they know if he's injured. Like,
yeah.
You're
I don't in there know with him every day. Like, you're going to know if he's off or not 100%.
And
at this point, you should at least.
The frustration for me is Teague is playing because Thibodeau signed him. And Thibodeau's the GM and the coach. And Thibodeau didn't draft Tyus. I think he's cool with Tyus. But, like, there's this off-court, you know, angle to this where he's worried about, like, justifying that, you know, that deal in ways. And it was a big deal. It was the most expensive contract that Timberwolves ever signed. So
yeah, you know, it's troubling. Before we head out here, is it fair at this point in the season with how many losses they have on the books against bad teams to worry a little bit about this team in the playoffs with just how bipolar they are and how bipolar they are on a kind of not night to night exactly, but more
sure.
like. Every few days they have a bipolar game. Is it a little bit of a concern now headed into the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, because all it takes is a couple stinkers in a playoff series, and you lose. So, I don't know. I think they again, it's that's that talent point. I think they do have the talent to beat a Denver Portland for sure. Like, I think that shouldn't, that, like, if that's the first round playoff series, like 3-6, probably like the 3-6 series, then yeah, they should handle that team. But if Portland or Denver, who I think are well-coached teams, play 7 solid games, like, and the Wolves play 5, they could beat them, and they shouldn't be beat. I still have some concerns about if the Wolves match up with Oklahoma City, even if the Wolves are clicking. Like, I think that's gonna be a tough playoff matchup. But yeah, I don't know. It's, you would like to think that in the playoffs, you know, we talk about the Andrew Wiggins, like the popcorn games, the games against Toronto or Cleveland. You'd like to hope that all 7 of those games, Andrew Wiggins comes out and brings it in an engaged way, and that the other player, like, that makes it so they have 3 engaged, really good players. But Andrew Wiggins doesn't bring it every game. And honestly, like, and I would have to, like, dig through the game log data and stuff, but I'm telling you, man, a midweek game on the road against a bad Eastern Conference team.
Almost a loss every time.
I'm particularly talking to Andrew Wiggins. Like, he is the energy level in that game, the assertiveness he plays with in that game compared to a game against the Cavs and Raptors, I don't think there's, I mean, it's such a difference. A lot of players probably play up and play down to, you know, to big games, national TV games. Andrew Wiggins, the discrepancy.
The Cavs Wiggins is the max deal guy.
Yeah. Yep. I think he, if he played like that, you know, all the time, then for sure.
Yeah. If he's reaching that level, he's the max player. We're not seeing that every week.
And if that remains consistent throughout these next 5 years that he's on this deal, I don't know. Can you deal with 20 games a year where he just doesn't particularly seem to be engaged? I don't know. There's a lot of questions about that deal. And, you know, largely this season, I've been impressed by Andrew Wiggins, the effort and stuff. But it is that it's these games where, I mean, to be blunt, it just doesn't look like he cares as much.
Yeah. And this should be a win. It's an NBA team, and you always have a chance. You should beat the Hawks.
Yeah.
You should beat the Hawks.
And you know what? And we would be willing to forgive that had they not lost to the Suns, lost to the Grizzlies, lost to the Nets, and lost to the Magic. I mean, those teams have like 50 combined wins.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that it's not one of those that stick out. It's the combination of that. It's compiling over the course of a season. And it's that concerning tipping point where, oh, it's just a bad game. Oh, it's just a bad game. Oh, now it's kind of a trend. That is kind of the concern, which is what makes you a little nervous about this team. And it's really hard to read the Timberwolves still. Yeah. They're a really hard team to read.
And to spin this positively, I think this goes back to the they haven't yet optimized theory, that maybe in more time, these things start to fall off and things, you know, come together. Maybe this is just a byproduct of the growth of the team. And then, you know, eventually the odds of this happening drops down a lot more. We see engagement more consistently. We're also in the slog of the middle of the season too. I bet you a lot of those players had in the back of their mind that they were getting on a plane after this game in Atlanta and flying to Toronto to play one of the best teams in the NBA the very next night. So, like, to some degree, you know, it's forgivable. And I think you and I are being a little bit harsh right now, and it's immediate frustration after the fact that this just happened. But some of this is just it's kind of ridiculous how much they are losing to these teams. And it's not that these teams seem to be playing great. It seems to be that the Wolves are letting them win by not playing anywhere near 48 good minutes of basketball.
Yeah. I don't know. And you don't want to come out on them too hard, like you're saying, that if they can push through, maybe they have the upswing after the All-Star break and you start seeing them hit that ceiling of potential that you kind of see with the talent on the court.
It's the best time to do it, right? Like, that's right before the playoffs. I mean, you got to –
You hope so, but yeah, it's a tough stretch coming up ahead. I mean, Toronto tonight is
The end of the January month is going to be a rough one again, but hopefully, I mean, they roasted the Cajun at the beginning of January. Hopefully they can at the end of January before we head into All-Star break here. We'll see. It'll be interesting. Toronto tonight. We didn't even talk about them, but that's going to be a tough matchup for them. We've been going for a while, though, so we're gonna let the people go. Thanks, Dane, for coming on, talking about the trades, talking about the Timberwolves. Appreciate you coming on.
For sure. I'll see you next week.
This has been another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.